Good morning. This is KGNU. We're tuned into the Morning Magazine. It's Monday, March 1st. I'm Roz Brown. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio.
So they are basically lying to the permitting agencies.
The library district is not going to happen this year.
When you're there, the only thing you can think about is being home.
The first International Women's Day took place in 1911.
Those are some of the voices you'll hear on today's magazine coming up. Boulder Beat News reporter Shay Castle joins us for an update on what's new at Boulder City Hall. Then Plan Boulder County held its annual meeting last night with a topic devoted to water supply and flood mitigation. We'll hear from one of the presenters this morning on what expansion of the Gross Reservoir would mean to Boulder and neighboring towns. We'll also get a preview of this afternoon's Metro Show, airing at 3 p.m. on KGNU, when Miriam Schiff discusses the upcoming March 8th International Women's Day. At 8:35 this morning on this morning's Public Affairs program, Frank Dabowski is in. He talks with Boulder County District Attorney Michael Doherty. Also stay tuned at 9 for Counterspin, a weekly look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. And at 9:30 for another morning of eclectic music, Doug Gertner will be here until noon today at KGNU. But first, let's take a look at headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Colorado will move into phase 1B3 of its COVID-19 vaccination plan this Friday. About 1 million people will become eligible to receive a vaccine, including those who are over 60 years old and frontline workers in grocery stores and agriculture. Governor Jared Polis announced the move into the next phase on Friday. Also starting the end of this week, people age 16 to 59 with two or more pre-existing conditions such as cancer, chronic kidney disease, COPD, diabetes, or others will be eligible. Nine News reports that people in the 60-plus age group should go through their health care provider or a health system. State officials said they will provide an update this week with more information about the best way for this age group to sign up. Meanwhile, the state's goal of vaccinating 70% of those over 70 years old by the end of February was met in at least 21 counties in Colorado. In Denver on Saturday, National Jewish Health held a vaccination clinic geared toward that group. Denver 7 reports that some people over 70 have had trouble obtaining a vaccination appointment. Over the weekend, a third vaccine was approved, this one made by Johnson & Johnson. It requires only one shot. Governor Polis released a statement saying that the approval was great news. Parents and students gathered at Denver's Manual High School on Sunday afternoon for a socially distanced rally against state standardized testing, also known as CMAS, which stands for Colorado Measures of Academic Success. The protesters want students and parents to opt out of this year's test. The pandemic has disrupted traditional learning, and Denver 7 reports that some parents feel now is just not the time to test kids. Students would have to go to school for the test regardless of remote learning status. It will be up to each school to decide what to assign students to do if they opt out in the Denver system. School board director Tay Anderson said that data collected by the test won't be helpful because teachers know how their students are doing and they went to school to be educators, not proctors. He expects well over 50% of the district will not test. He says the goal is to send a message to lawmakers. State legislators have proposed a bill that would call on Colorado's Department of Education to request a waiver from the federal government of the requirement of statewide standardized testing this year. So far, 7 states have already requested a waiver, and at least 6 others are in the process of doing so. The city of Denver has started its new approach to handling complaints about local homeless encampments. Now those calls will be handled by what the city is calling the Early Intervention Team instead of the police department. A spokesperson for the city told 9 News that the intention of the change is to reach people experiencing homelessness while the groupings are small. This team will be able to work with unhoused individuals and match them up with resources that can help them get off the streets. The city is expecting to send about 25 cases to the new team per day. A virtual series aimed at talking to children about race will start tonight. The Daily Camera reports that organizers originally wanted to set up a book study and author speaker series for teachers in the Boulder Valley and St. Vrain Valley school districts, but based on feedback, they agreed it was too much to ask teachers to take on during the pandemic. Instead, there will now be a series featuring Rosemary Allen, the president and CEO of the Institute for Racial Equity and Excellence. Sessions are open to the public and are targeted to adults who want to learn more about how to talk to children and teens about race. The series, which was originally pushed by Erie parent Alicia Graves, was organized in conjunction with the town of Erie and the Boulder Valley and St. Vrain Valley school districts, which will provide education credit to participating teachers. Each session starts at 6:30 p.m. and will be aimed at talking to a different age group. The first is this evening about talking to preschoolers, then on Tuesday for elementary school, March 15th for middle school, and March 17th for high school. The sessions will be televised on the Erie YouTube channel. Boulder County Public Health is inviting people who reside or own a business in unincorporated areas to join officials in a Monday night virtual meeting to discuss secondhand smoke protections. Officials say the county needs feedback from residents and businesses about updates to county smoking restrictions inside and immediately outside the entrances to businesses and publicly accessed facilities located outside cities and towns. County spokesperson Angela Cimentel said that the department has a goal of creating equity in smoke-free protections across the county by updating the unincorporated area smoke-free code, which has not been revised since 2004. People can join the meeting at 6 p.m. this evening via Zoom. It'll be sunny today with highs close to 50, and the forecast is for sunny skies tomorrow and Wednesday, with highs in the mid to upper 60s. Right now, it's about 25 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It's 8:11. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Well, not everyone has time to follow what's going on at Boulder City Hall, so every couple of weeks we check in with Shay Castle, a journalist and the owner and publisher of Boulder Beat News.
Good morning, Shay. We had a study session last week about the proposed library district for the city. There are several groups and people who would like to see a library district in Boulder because it's hard, libraries are hard to fund. And the city has talked about this. They've been approached about this. And the public will be able to comment on whether or not they want a library district next month. What were your takeaways from that discussion?
I think the biggest takeaway is that the library district is not going to happen this year. But for the first time, a majority of council at least committed to exploring the idea further. They've been pretty cool on it in the past. They don't want to, you know, cede control of the library. But they said they'd at least get some work started, maybe hammering out the final terms of the agreement before they actually move to form or fund one. I think the most interesting part of that is the funding, really. The reason they decided not to pursue that this year is because there's going to be at least one other tax on the ballot, and they didn't want to harm that potential measure, which would raise money to pay for these large capital projects that the city has been neglecting for several years. So April 20th is the scheduled public hearing. The library world is kind of made up of its own people, and they tend to be really big champions of this idea. They've formed the group Boulder Library Champions and produced some really fantastic looks at Boulder's budget and the library's budget, which has been fairly flat over the last, you know, 15 to 20 years, and that's their main complaint. Advocates of a district is that Boulder is not funding the library to the level it serves.
And there are a lot of library districts in the state, so Boulder would join that, but they've always been a little reluctant to give up control. Is that a good way to say it?
I'd say so, yes. There are a lot of districts, and, you know, what it really would do, advocates say, is have people who don't live in Boulder pay for the library. Of course, they already do now through sales tax, which go to the general fund. But by levying a more direct property tax, it would spread the cost over a wider base. And the library would no longer be a municipal-run service, but the city could retain ownership of all the buildings and the assets that the library owns and just, you know, lease them or kind of borrow them to the new district, loan them, rather, to the new district.
Great. So we'll watch for the public hearing coming up in April. So on Tuesday of this week, we have three public hearings at the Boulder City Council meeting, but most appear to be about property issues that may not be familiar to most folks. Can you tell us what those public hearings are about?
Those public hearings are for individual historic landmarks. So they're pretty quick and easy matters. The Landmarks Board has already unanimously recommended that all of these properties become historic landmarks, which protects them from, you know, redevelopment. And they'll go pretty quickly before council. It's a legal proceeding, so they have to follow certain steps, but it's a presentation and then council votes. None of them seem to be controversial, so I imagine they'll go by very quickly.
Okay. And there's also an agenda item called Community Benefit and Site Review Criteria Check-In.
This is kind of the real meat of Tuesday's meeting. The community benefit project came out of the height limit discussion, which is how it's often referred to. So Boulder has had a kind of timeout on building to the city's 55-foot height limit for 5 or 6 years now. And the thought was, we're getting all these tall buildings. I mean, they only ever go up to 55 feet. I just want to be clear, they never go above that. But people were concerned that we're getting, you know, 55-foot buildings. So council did a pause, and in that 5 to 6 year pause now, the process of determining, okay, if we allow people to build to the citywide height limit, what do we get in exchange for it? And so the first phase of this project was to quantify how much additional affordable housing Boulder should require to allow buildings to go up to 55 feet. And then the second part of this is, what other community benefits do we want to look at? You know, arts or subsidized commercial space or space for nonprofits, things of that nature. And the site review criteria, I'm slightly less familiar with because it's a little more wonky, but it's kind of the same thing. A lot of times, extra height has to be granted through a process called the site review process. And so I think council is taking a look at, you know, what triggers that, how the process goes, things of that nature.
All right. And we are into the month of March. Anything equally or more important that the city council will be discussing this one?
Not in regular meetings, but City Council will be appointing board and commission members. They'll be interviewing members in March and making their appointments by the end of March. And it doesn't sound all that thrilling, but I continually harp on it every year that these are really important because these boards and commissions make recommendations to council in some situations, like the planning board and open space and other boards with actual power. They make sometimes binding decisions. So it's really important to watch who gets on these boards. They've been fairly political in the past, even though, you know, politics in Boulder doesn't feel as dire as politics on the national level. It is still very interesting and revealing to watch this appointment process.
Okay, well, we'll be watching to see what happens after Tuesday's meeting into March and into April. Thank you, Shay. We'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
Again, that's Shay Castle. You can read more of Castle's work at boulderbeat.news. And you can always catch up with what did happen at a Tuesday night city council meeting on our Wednesday morning magazine.
Support comes from Centennial Peaks Hospital, offering help for listeners or their loved ones who may be experiencing a mental health crisis. Inpatient and outpatient services available from a medical staff of independent practitioners. ECT available for treatment-resistant conditions. Details at CentennialPeaks.com.
It's 8:17 here at KGNU. Plan Boulder County held its annual meeting last night, virtually, with a presentation on the proposed Gross Dam expansion, which would be the biggest construction project in Boulder County history.
The project and all the water would be for Denver Water, which is Denver and I think 12 or 13 suburbs. None of the water would be used in Boulder County at all. So Boulder County would get all the negative impacts. There's no benefit whatsoever to Boulder County for this project.
That's Gary Walkner, director of Save the Colorado and a leading environmental opponent of the expansion of Gross Reservoir. In his presentation to Plan Boulder County, Walkner said expansion of the reservoir would further drain and destroy the upper Colorado River by removing over 3.5 billion gallons of water per year, turning some of the headwater streams into zero-flow day ditches.
Taking more water out of the Colorado River is highly controversial. It continues to get national news all the time because the river is already a drain bone dry before it reaches the Sea of Cortez, and everyone's fighting over the water that's left, and climate change is predicting, of course, water to be significantly less water. We were in Grist Environmental News site last year, and then just a couple of weeks ago, there was a major scientific study that came out that this recommended no new diversions of water in the upper basin out of Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming, New Mexico, in the Colorado River system. Of course, this would be a a new diversion. The gross dam expansion would be a new diversion of water out of the system. And so the water chaos, the ecological chaos, and the political chaos on the Colorado River is escalating constantly.
A study conducted 3 years ago didn't find many Boulder County residents in favor of the project, and the more they learned, the more they opposed it. Most recently, the Nederland Board of Trustees sent a letter to the Boulder County Commissioners asking them to deny the project. As Walkner noted, town leaders are concerned about the project's impact on climate, roads, and local ecosystems, the removal of hundreds of thousands of trees, large-scale cement installation, and thousands of trucks on Boulder County roads.
If the new dam is expanded, it would be the tallest dam in the history of Colorado. It'd be a massive construction project, quite a bit bigger than most people are really aware will exist. And everyone keeps talking about expanding the dam or raising its height. Well, it's not actually an expansion or a raising of its height. There would be a massive new dam built in front of and over the top of the current dam. It would be 471 feet high, again, the tallest one in the history of Colorado, to hold back three times as much water. It is a water supply project to meet the water supply perceived needs in Denver metropolitan area and for Denver water. It's not a flood control project. All the water would be diverted out of South Boulder Creek before it gets out of the canyon, you know, if the project were to happen.
The Nederland trustees also wrote in their letter to the county commissioners that the project is completely inappropriate in the middle of a climate crisis, and climate change makes it extremely unlikely that the reservoir will ever be filled because of decreasing moisture and increasing temperatures and evaporation rates. Walkner says there will also be impacts to Grand County.
It'd be about 5 billion gallons of new diversion water every year out of all of these little streams in Grand County. Some of them would be drained bone dry. They have what they call zero flow days. The serious degradation to the flows in Grand County impacts the fish, endangered species, aquatic life, wildlife. We think that it would also violate the Clean Water Act. You're basically flatlining the Colorado River. It's like complete ecological degradation and just devastation of the river, of the Colorado River and Hot Sulphur Springs. So that's kind of why our organization exists and why we're into this. There would, however, be, as you know, extraordinary negative impacts on Boulder County, because this is where all the construction would occur. Be the biggest construction project in the history of Boulder County, lasting at least 5 years, a massive new dam, 131 feet higher, the tallest dam in the state. It would involve large-scale use of explosives to quarry rock for the dam. It would inundate 400 new acres, including wetland areas, require thousands of semi-tractor trailer trips up the curvy mountain roads, especially Coal Creek Canyon, a little bit of Flagstaff Road, and also back around through Nederland, through the Magnolia area. They clear-cut somewhere between 200,000 and 500,000 trees. A lot of noise pollution, air pollution. Forsyth Falls would be inundated with the new reservoir, if you ever walked there, back behind the current reservoir. There'd be significant greenhouse gas emissions from the construction. Making concrete uses a lot of energy, which creates a lot of greenhouse gas emissions. Disruptions of wildlife, including elk, cougars, and newly resident moose. Of course, one of the big concerns, massive, significant negative impacts to home values and quality of life of nearby residents who live up Flagstaff Road, who live in the Magnolia area, and who live up Coal Creek Canyon. They are beside themselves. They are extremely concerned about the project, and they are fighting to stop it tooth and nail. We are helping them. We believe it's very inconsistent with the Boulder County Master Plan, and it would mar Boulder County's reputation as an environmentally proactive and responsible community and recreational paradise.
The Denver utility officials say the dam is needed to prevent water shortages and to adequately supply its growing base of 1.5 million customers, which again does not include Boulder County. But Walkner says there's new data that shows Denver has overestimated how much water it needs because it's been so successful with conservation efforts.
So they are basically lying to the permitting agencies, saying they're going to have massive expansion amount of water they use when the water use is actually going down because water conservation is working. Denver Water doesn't need the water. Their water use is going down, not up. They don't need to do this massive environmentally damaging project here in Boulder County.
Walkner says there's a variety of lawsuits the group has filed to stop expansion of the Gross Reservoir, many of which are pending in the courts. He notes that approval of the reservoir and dam expansion by the Boulder County Commissioners would be one of the final steps in the project, which is 17 years in the making.
Boulder County has what's called 1041 regulations. These are regulations that allow the county to permit and authorize or not projects within Boulder County. This process is ongoing. There's a proposed hearing in July of this year, and the public comment period is open right now. They are the deciders.
Again, you were listening to Gary Walkner, director of Save the Colorado. He was speaking last night to Plan Boulder, their annual meeting, and planboulder.org has planned to have his full comments along with questions up on their website shortly. That's planboulder.org. You can go to bouldercounty.org to learn more about the project and leave a comment for the county commissioners, or go to savebouldercounty.org to learn more. Well, all eyes are on the U.S. Senate after the Colorado Outdoor Recreation Economy, or CORE Act, cleared the U.S. House on Friday. Part of a larger public lands package, that measure aims to boost Colorado's outdoor recreation economy and protect some 400,000 acres of public lands, including Camp Hale, where the 10th Mountain Division soldiers trained for alpine combat in World War II. Mike Greenwood trained at Camp Hale before being deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan.
I think this is important because it's taking another giant step towards protecting the land that many veterans, specifically 10th Mountain veterans, hold sacred to them.
If the CORE Act is approved by the U.S. Senate, Camp Hale would be designated as the nation's first national historic landscape. The site also is known as the birthplace of Colorado's ski industry, launched by returning war veterans. Colorado Representatives Joan Neguse and Diana DeGette led the effort in the House to pass a bundle of 9 bills, including the Colorado Wilderness Act and protections for the Grand Canyon. If passed, the legislation would get the Biden administration closer in its goal of preserving at least 30% of the nation's publicly owned lands and waters for future generations by 2030. Greenwood says Colorado's natural landscapes have helped him and countless others returning veterans adjust to civilian life and heal after returning from combat overseas.
When you're there, the only thing you can think about is being home. This is our image of home when we're not home. And then when we get home, this is our grounds to come back home. It's where we find peace.
The CORE Act also would protect the Continental Divide. Well, a picturesque 117-mile stretch of highway in southwest Colorado, known as the Silver Thread Scenic Byway, is now a national scenic byway. Also known as State Highway 149, it runs from South Fork to Creed to Lake City and ends at the Blue Mesa Reservoir just outside Gunnison. Laura Palmisano for Colorado's KVNF reports.
The Silver Thread Scenic Byway, also known as State Highway 149, runs from South Fork to Creed to Lake City and ends at the Blue Mesa Reservoir just outside of Gunnison.
And it weaves through 4 counties. It crosses the Continental Divide.
That's Kathleen Murphy. She runs the Silver Thread Colorado Scenic and Historic Byway. It's the nonprofit that championed for the designation. She says for every 6 miles of byway,
there is one historic landmark that is on either the National or State Historic Registry,
including the historic mining town of Creed, Wheeler Geological Area, and the infamous Alfred Packer Massacre site outside of Lake City. Murphy says the designation is good for tourism.
Also will give us an avenue to continue to protect the beauty and the history along the scenic byway.
The Federal Highway Administration selects which highways become national scenic byways as directed by an act of Congress. The administration recently named the Scenic Highway of Legends in Colorado as one too. The highway goes from Walsenburg to Trinidad in the southern part of the state. Colorado now boasts 13 American byways. For KVNF, I'm Laura Palmisano.
And it's 8:28. You're listening to the Morning Magazine on KGNU. International Women's Day will be celebrated a week from today, and Miriam Schiff, a host of KGNU's Metro program at 3 o'clock this afternoon, will share what's going to be going on in the Denver area. Here's a preview of the show.
March the 8th is International Women's Day. Here's some history. International Women's Day was originated by Clara Zetkin, Z-E-T-K-I-N. She suggested the idea in 1910 at an international conference of working women in Copenhagen. There were 100 women there from 17 countries, and they agreed on her suggestion unanimously. The first International Women's Day took place in 1911. That makes this year the 109th International Women's Day celebration. Today, my guests are the co-chairs of Denver's fourth annual Denver International Women's Day, Catherine Ebert Gray, retired U.S. Ambassador, Director of Global Education, CU Denver, Anschutz, and Jamie Landers, Director, Advanced Programs, Lockheed Martin Space.
Again, tune in at 3 o'clock this afternoon for KGNU's Metro program to hear more about International Women's Day coming up next Monday.
On the next Alternative Radio, hear India's great economist, Prabhat Patnaik, from neoliberalism to neo-fascism. That's Alternative Radio, Wednesday evenings at 6, right here on Community Radio, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
And still ahead this morning, we have Jim Hightower coming your way just after an update from the BBC here at the bottom of the hour. And then it will be this morning's public affairs program. Frank Dabowski will be talking with Boulder County District Attorney Michael Doherty. Then also stay tuned at 9 o'clock for Counterspin, a weekly look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. And of course, at 9:30, it's always eclectic music. And today, Doug Gertner is in. He'll be in until noon today when we have another update from the BBC, by the way. We're looking for a forecast today of a high around 50 degrees and then the low tonight around 30. Tomorrow it will be 60 degrees and then Wednesday 55. There is a chance of some rain, possibly mixed with snow by Thursday. So a wonderful start to our first week of March. Can't wait to get out there again this week after all these cold temperatures we've been having. Outside our Boulder studios this morning, it is 28 degrees, and it's time now for that update from the BBC.